Stegum.
Hurricane.
Hello and welcome back to the Golden Hurricast. We are a weekly podcast covering Golden Hurricane athletics at the University of Tulsa. I'm Ryan Token.
I'm Matt Rechtin, and it's game week. It's finally back. Tulsa has a football game for the first time since November 22nd of last year. And I don't know. I just want to say this, like my excitement, my hype was going up last week in our episode when we were talking to Caden, and you know, nothing has happened, I think, in the last week to tamper it or like knock it down anymore. And so I feel like this is always the case for our preseason prediction, our schedule run through episode. Is I am just like incredibly amped. Like this TU team is going 13-0. I will take nothing else. That's just how I feel right now. That being said, Ryan, how are you doing? What are your thoughts? What are your feelings right now for Tulsa football being back?
I'm feeling really good. I am actually in Breckenridge right now, hanging out with my family on vacation. And if you've listened to the podcast, you might know Matt and I, both from St. Louis, both grew up Mizzou fans. So my dad and brother here are still diehard Mizzou fans. I'm still a more casual Mizzou fan than them, but still a Mizzou fan. I've been talking a lot of Mizzou football this week and just hype for college football in general while we've been on vacation here. And that is bleeding into Tulsa fandom, of course, for me as well. So very excited. We did get a request on Twitter last week or like 2 days ago to put our in writing predictions for the season and what we think we're going to do this year, what we think the record's going to be. So, Matt, if you put out 13-0, I'm going to hold you to it because that's been the request from the fan base. So we'll get to that later. I don't know if you're going to do that or not for real, but I'm excited to see it. But I'm very excited for the college football season. Really excited for this episode. Going to break down the schedule a bit, get to some Arkansas Pine Bluff preview and go from there. So I'm feeling good.
Yeah, I'm probably the more optimistic of the two of us. Maybe won't go 13-0 and have to put it down, you know, pen to paper, but you know, it's we'll see. Maybe this episode will drop me down a little bit as I actually like think about some of these matchups.
I'm intrigued what you think it is, because I'm intrigued that you said you think you're the more optimistic, because I went on just on the interview with Caden last week. I said 8-4 and he was trying to talk, well, he didn't really try to talk me down on it, honestly. He was saying you should be irrational, but he counted 8-4 as irrational, which I kind of get, because when I first, and we'll get to this in a sec here, when I first broke down the schedule in my own time, my first thought was 6-6, and then I went 7-5, and then I went 8-4, and I stopped myself at 8-4. But I think 8-4 is, in my opinion, and we can probably start talking schedule here, I think 8-4 is probably the most realistic top end scenario. I can't really see how we get to 9-3. So if you're going 9-3, I mean, you can see, you can switch in one anywhere, but If you can get there, I want to know how you can, or if you can't, I want to hear what your record thoughts are. So my top end, I think I'm putting it 8-4, but what are you thinking?
Okay. So I was going off of, I thought you were going to say 7-5 kind of at the end of the day, because I know we talked last week and you're like 8-4 is kind of the top, but I didn't know if that's kind of where you were leaning. Like,
yes. I still don't know where I'm going to end up putting it like in writing,
but I'm leaning 8-4 again today. I feel like 8-4 is kind of on how I'm looking at it. I can see us getting to 8-4 a couple of different ways. And so I'm kind of like thinking that is my thought for how, you know, final record, 8-4, 9-4 after that bowl win.
There we go. So let's break down the schedule so we can get some names on paper here real quick of teams we're playing. And if you've listened to some of the previous episodes, you probably know, or if you've just been looking into it in your own time, you definitely know. The home schedule is way easier than the away. The home conference schedule, I should specify, is way easier than the road conference schedule.
You don't have
But let me just break it down for you here. We've got Arkansas Pine Bluff on Thursday, and then we go on the road to Washington. We get Oklahoma at home, We go on the road against Northern Illinois. And then the rest of the year, like this, as it's already been, it's home away, home away, home away. We never have any like duplicate home games or duplicate road games. So conference schedule starts. We get a home Temple. We go on the road for Florida Atlantic. Home Rice at SMU. Home Charlotte at Tulane. Home against North Texas. And then on the road at East Carolina to end the year. So those home conference games are Temple, Rice, Charlotte, and North Texas, right? And that is pretty much as easy as you could draw it up for the home conference schedule. And that does not include the other like non-conference home game, not including Oklahoma, which is this Thursday against Arkansas Pine Bluff. So if we realistically, you can win every home game this year except for OU. There's a chance you can win OU, but I'm not writing that one down as a win. So assuming you lose the OU game, what is that? That's four home wins right there. You get Arkansas, Pine Bluff, Temple, Rice, Charlotte, North Texas. That's five home wins right there. So looking pretty good on the home schedule is if you just take care of business there. And it's okay. So let's say you drop one of those. So we get four home wins. Can we pick up four road wins? It gets a little dicey in there if we don't win all those games. That's Northern Illinois, should be a win. That's Florida Atlantic, tough team. I have that as a loss, honestly, in my drawdown right here. We get at SMU, always a close game, toss up. They're going to be a good team this year. You get at Tulane, probably a loss. They've returned a lot of that team. And you get at East Carolina to close the year, which I've got as a win, but is another tough one. So it's close. If you drop a couple of those home games that you shouldn't lose, all of a sudden you're in dicey scenarios. But if you take care of business, the season's looking pretty good. So that's why I'm pretty optimistic on this one. But out of those games, Matt, what do you think are the easy wins? And what do you think are maybe the more interesting question is, which of those are kind of the shakier games that you think we have an actually kind of a good chance to win?
Yeah. So first I'll kind of say, you know, the comments, take care of business. And that's something that I feel like we haven't been able to count on in the last couple of years under Montgomery. And based on everything that we've heard from Wilson, either from Wilson, about Wilson, whether it be from Caden last week, where he just talks about how this team is more disciplined, or his press conference today, where he was talking about the only difference between like a lot of the players on this roster and guys at these big Power Five programs is their commitment to like work, their commitment to practice, and how Kevin Wilson has kind of come in. Kevin Wilson loves practice. You can kind of get that from how he was talking about it, how the guys they had, Ben Kapinski and Jordan Ford, kind of came in today and they were asked the same question. It's like, Kevin Wilson loves practice. Do you guys love practice? And they're like, yeah, because of the energy that he brings. And so I feel like there's just a lot more, if you want to call it discipline, if you want to call it like attention to the small details, things like that, gives me a lot more confidence, I think, going into this year. And obviously, you know, this is all like building on a house of cards confidence, something like that, where we haven't actually seen anything.
Right.
You know, we won't know anything until Thursday. Thursday might not even be the best test because, you know, Arkansas Pine Bluff, you're playing an FCS school. Obviously Tulsa doesn't have a spotless track record in that regard, but you know, it will at least get to see a little bit of what's going to be, you know, the product on the field. And so all that being said, like I have more confidence in Tulsa being able to get the job done and winning those games that we should be winning, at least like looking at the schedule right now. I will also say, like, so looking at the SP Plus, I think Tulsa is underrated because the defense is so high. Like, I want to say it was 116th in the nation, somewhere around there on the first, like, preseason, before week zero kind of stuff. And I don't think our defense is going to be that low. High. I think I said high previously. I said low now. I'm just talking. I'll switch to low. Make it easy. I don't think our defense is as bad as people think it is. And I think our offense is probably, our offense to me seems like it could be boom or bust. Like, I think we have a lot of electric playmakers. You know, you look at Braylon, you look at the running back room, which has just like got a ton of depth. But we don't have, so like, we lost.
I think like, let me cut you off right there. Electric playmaker. It gets hard for me to see an electric playmaker outside of Braylon and Braylon at law. I know those aren't the two at law that you mentioned before, but like that also works. You got those two.
That's the boom. The other guys, the question marks are the bust.
Maybe up in the air, but like maybe Bill Jackson will do it. But like we saw Jordan Ford last year, he didn't seem like he was really going to be like the big time. I think he's a good running back, but I don't think he's going to be like the guy that breaks off 50 yard runs. You know, maybe he will. I'd love to be wrong. But I just don't see that from outside of those two guys.
Yeah. And I would agree for the most part. And that's kind of like, so maybe the boom and bust is you've got guys at the very top and then you've got a gap, you know, and then you've got the rest of the, you know, whether that be, you know, your Camden Benjamin, your Nick Rempert, your Marquise Shoulders, Devin Williams, whoever ends up playing. I would be remiss not to say Malachi Jones, but he's listed kind of at the bottom of the depth chart for whatever reason right now. So I think the more important thing for this offense is the system as opposed to the players. I think that's kind of where if the system works as it's designed, as, you know, Spurrier Jr. and Wilson are kind of drawn up, I think those guys are so talented just on the offensive scheming that that's kind of where that's the other side of the boom and the bust comes. Do we have the talent to actually make that work? Don't know yet. These guys are young. So there's definitely, I feel like that is where, so I'll say this, like I'm optimistic, but if I can see anywhere where it kind of falls apart, it's that we don't have the personnel on the specialist positions to actually like implement the offenses like it's being drawn up right now by Kevin Wilson, by Steve Spurrier.
By specialist positions, do you mean like the skill positions, like receiver and running back?
Sorry. Yeah. Receiver, running back. I think the line is loaded. I think tight end is going to be huge. I think quarterback is going to be rock solid. It's the running back room is the question mark. It's the wide receiver outside of like 1 and 1.5 kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that was a tangent. That all that being said, so taking that back to the schedule, I think that we at a minimum go 5-1 at home. I think we could. Will we? Probably not. Would it be fun?
At a minimum, go 5-1 at home.
At a minimum, I don't think we lose. I don't think we lose any home game other than Oklahoma.
North Texas is a decent team. That's a potential loss. Rice has a big JT Daniels is their quarterback now. I know he hasn't really worked out at his past stops so far, but like he's a big name. I'm not saying we're gonna lose, but like minimum 5-1 is pretty. Yeah, that's pretty. I agree with you. 5-1 minimum, is what I would think, but like, man, it seems pretty tough.
Well, the math doesn't work if we're not 5-1 at home. So in order to get to 8-4 pretty regularly, with a chance of 9-3, if you pull off some upsets and we're actually way better than you know predicted right now, that's kind of where. So.
Yep.
Arkansas Pine Bluff, calling that a win. Temple, I'm just going to call that a win right now. Rice, well, I'll come back to that one. Charlotte, that's a win. I don't like Charlotte's kind of, they were predicted lower than us and we were predicted pretty low.
They were predicted last.
Yeah. Charlotte. So then you've got North Texas, you've got Rice. Like those are the two games that I feel like are probably going to be the toughest at home outside of Oklahoma.
So it's so wild, like Charlotte and North Texas being two of the tougher games at home. Charlotte. That is just the case of such an easy home scenario.
Yeah. Did I say, if I said Charlotte, I meant Rice.
All right.
Rice,
yeah. That's what I meant. Texas. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And so I think at that point, you know, I think the offensive growing pains are going to be early. I think you kind of look at what Kevin Wilson did at Indiana, both in year one and from year one to year two, and how the offense just gets better over time as it's kind of able to work and everybody becomes more familiar with everything. And so I think at that point, you know, if those games happen earlier, maybe a little different, but I think Rice, you're kind of coming, oh, what is that? Not off the bye week, right before the bye week. So, you know, kind of derailed. My point is moot at that point. But the fact that North Texas is like so late in the year, I think we're running like,
yep,
full steam ahead at that point. And so that's where, you know, the fact that those games are later, I think helps us. Mm-hmm. Now, where do I think those other three wins are going to come from? At Northern Illinois. I don't think Northern Illinois, like it was a close game last year. It should not have been. We were up early in the first half and then they came back because we just kind of like the bottom fell out and we didn't make adjustments, which I think was kind of a trend. Don't really see that happening. I don't think Northern Illinois is close. So they're not terrible. They're probably, like, if you look and in terms of, I don't know, tiers, like, they're 106, I think, at one point at SP Plus, somewhere around there. And we're, what, 96, 95?
Northern Illinois is 115.
Okay, yeah. They're lower than I even thought. So I think that's just a matter of, like, I think we're lower than we should be. I don't. Mm-hmm. I see that as a win. So I could see, I see us going 2-2.
Same.
In the non-conference schedule. Then at FAU, we hate Tom Herman. Tulsa plays with bulletin board material. That one. Okay. So right now, if we're looking at what do I have us, right? There's 6 wins, you know.
Is the bulletin board material just because Tom Herman, or is there something else there?
No, it's just Tom Herman. And now I'm kind of like, okay. I'm not going to say anything on FAU yet, because I want to kind of go, all right, got 6 wins. We've got the 5 home games, and we've got Northern Illinois. So now we've got at FAU, at SMU, at Tulane, and at ECU. So we've got 4 games left. I've got to come up with 2 wins out of those. I think that the 2 most likely, well, I don't know if most likely, the 2 that I see us winning at SMU and at ECU.
That's what I have. That's what I have too, surprisingly. And I know nothing about Florida Atlantic, so, like, I can't put my money where my mouth is really on that, aside from I know who their quarterback is, and he has some name. He's got some credentials behind him. But I'm just with you. I've got those 2. In my 8-4 scenario, those are my 2 wins.
Yeah. And so then it's just a matter of, okay, you win one of at Tulane or at FAU. To me, there's a chance. And so that's kind of where 9-3 could happen. You got to play brilliantly. Everything's got to be working. But other than that, I mean, 8-4 is very realistic for me. So games that I'm just going to, Washington, no. The way they ended last season and how they have so much back like that, and it's on the road, like, I just don't really, I can't see that happening. Versus OU. OU is probably going to win the Big 12 because they don't have that hard of a schedule, or they're at least going to make the title game. If not win, I mean, Texas is pretty good this year. And obviously you've got TCU and K-State still, but I would have loved to play OU last year. That being said, what is the team that Dylan Gabriel plays terribly against? It's Tulsa. There's always a chance that we beat Dylan Gabriel.
Yep.
Probably not very likely, unfortunately. I feel like I was talking earlier, maybe I was just talking to Ryan earlier this summer, where I was like, oh, if there's ever a year we're going to beat OU, like, it's got to be this one. One, because it's like the last time we play them in a long time. But also, like, they're just not at the level they were when we played them during, like, Lincoln Riley time. So, and then finally, ECU, I kind of just said win. ECU, I feel like, is so much more, like, inflated than they actually have done at any point.
And they lost Halton Naylor's after 50 billion years. Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I don't know if I can get to 9-3 still. Like, everything has to go perfectly to get there, pretty much. Or you have to pick off an OU or a Washington, right? Like, it's just, you can, I see it, right? But, like, if I were to, 8-4 is pretty much as high as I can go if I were to, like, put any kind of money on it or put it in writing. So I'm still at 8-4 with my, I do have SMU and ECU as wins, at SMU and at ECU being the 2 big conference road wins for us. At Florida Atlantic, they've got Casey Thompson at quarterback. I mentioned that earlier. Who knows, you know, like, he's a big name. He's a Texas guy. Tom Herman knows him, I'm sure, like, from high school days. And then he was at Nebraska, and, you know, that didn't super work out there, but, like, that's a guy who's got talent. So, like, and they've got some other, they were pretty good last year too. So, like, Florida Atlantic's going to be good. Tulane, I can't see us winning that game. We almost won it last year. Like, it was a 1-score game last year. It was 11 points or something. I don't remember. It was not a blowout loss last year at Tulane, and that was a home game.
It felt like so, it though.
It did. It was an ugly, it's the last 3 years against Tulane has been really ugly. But hey, I don't know. I just can't see us getting that one. So I'm still sticking at 8-4. if we get, and like, it's a first year coaching staff. You got a young quarterback still. He's a redshirt sophomore. It's like, oh man, like there's a way you can get there. There's too much pulling me back from getting to the 9-win scenario. Honestly, I still think 7-5 is more likely than 8-4 even. But 8-4 is realistic. I don't think it's stupid to say that 8-4 is a possibility here. So maybe we get there and that would be awesome. Maybe we get to 9-3. That would be incredible. That would be an amazing first year for Kevin Wilson.
I think 9-3 is the irrational. I think that's like the irrational side of me, that every time we do these, what I had us going 10-2 2 years ago, I had us winning like 9 games last year and then the injury happened to Bryn. So yeah, I'll say like, I'm not going to back down from 8-4 as like my prediction. I will just say like, I can understand why we wouldn't if the offense doesn't click like I think it will. So next question for you, what record would you be happy with?
I'm happy as long as we go to a bowl game, to be honest. We go 6-6. I'm happy. We go 7-5, even happier, 8-4, over the moon. So that's where I'm sitting. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I'm kind of the same, just because like not having gone to a bowl game last year sucked. And like, I feel like we were good enough to go to a bowl last year and we didn't get worse in the offseason, in my opinion. So,
well, we did lose our 2 best receivers. So,
yeah, you know. But I feel like as a whole, we didn't get worse.
Yeah.
So,
I hope across, not. Across I think there's a chance we did get worse on offense. There's a chance we got worse on offense. On defense, I don't think. Like, we lost some big guys on defense, too, you know?
We did, but I think some other guys. Some of the guys that we got coming in, I think, are just going to be huge playmakers.
Yeah, so I agree.
I feel like our defense will be better than last year, if I'm just, especially, man, I don't know. I think we've got the chance to have a stronger defense. Like, we had some guys last year, but I feel like our system just wasn't in, like, first year defensive coordinator. Granted, we have that. Well, he's not technically a first year, just first time FBS defensive coordinator. But I feel like offense will probably drop a little bit, defense will go up. And so I think net out is my thought.
You think, man, I thought you were going to say the opposite. I thought you were going to say defense would be, what did you just say? Did you say defense would be better, offense would go down?
Yeah.
Okay, I heard that different. I heard the opposite, and I was like, "Man,
said exactly what you thought, but you just couldn't believe it."
Yes, yeah, no, offense. I could totally, absolutely, could see that going down a bit. We just the big time talent doesn't seem to be there preseason. Who knows, right? We get into the season, maybe it is there. Defense could be better, could be worse. Who knows? You know, like there's a lot of question marks at a lot of positions on defense, but there does seem to be a lot of hype around the talent that was brought in and the talent that returned. So like, definitely can see that being better. So I don't know. Yeah, maybe we'll be there. Maybe we'll get there. If we finish 8-4, like if we get there, we're probably, that's at least top 3 in the league, you know, probably with an 8-4 with 2, and 2 of those losses would most likely be non-conference losses. We'd probably be sitting there with 2 league losses, like 6-2 in the American. That puts you in title race contention and at the very least top 3 in the league. That would be awesome. If that's how this goes the first year, that would be insane. If we go 7-5, say with 3 conference losses, we're 5-3 in the American, something like that. Still top of that half of the league. I'm still feeling really good, you know, first season with all the pieces we lost last year. I think that is very likely to happen, and I would still be very happy that it did happen. What that brings me to is like the fact that we are picked to finish 11th in this conference this year makes no sense to me. There's no way we are finishing behind Temple or like I have way less confidence in Navy now. They just got 40 balled by Notre Dame over the weekend. Notre Dame's good, you know, but like you don't lose by 40 if you're going to finish 9th probably or 10th or whatever they were picked to finish. It's like we're probably going to finish above them. Who else was picked above us? That doesn't make any sense. UAB, they got a first year head coach. They were like 7-5 last year. I could totally see us finishing above them. Hey, I'm picking
UAB
us to
got
beat
a
North
first
Texas
vote, though. So yeah, somebody was really high.
Who the hell did that? That is so wild. Yeah. North Texas, like probably has some talent, but I could see us winning that game. East Carolina's picked to finish 6th after losing so many players from last season. So I don't know about that one either. And then you get into like, I think the top 5 makes sense to me, you know, Tulane being number 1, UTSA, SMU, Memphis, Florida, Atlantic. That's a top 5 that I get. I understand why they were picked that way. I don't get why Tulsa was picked to finish 11th. I do get it. Like, it happens every year. I understand why, you know, I get it. But, like, there's no way we finished 11th in this conference.
I feel like part of it is there's just so much newness, you know. You've got three teams leaving, six teams coming in this year. And a lot of, I assume the AAC media poll is only done by media members of those 14 teams or markets.
I think so.
So I feel like there's just unfamiliarity as part of it. You know, like, teams don't, and Tulsa's small. When you think about Tulsa as a brand, as much as it kind of sucks right now and just kind of where we've been the last couple of years, like, Tulsa doesn't really, I don't know, we get written off. So I feel like it's more the name than anything. The fact that only Rice, South Florida, and Charlotte are below us, I think, just proves that, because those are teams that have been bad as of late. So yeah, I think, like Frank Haith always used to do, we're definitely going to finish ahead. I think our floor is like eighth. Like, if,
yep. Yeah. Makes sense.
But I could see us top six.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm saying our floor is 6-6 and two of those leagues are coming from Washington, and I guess floor maybe is 5-7, but two of those losses coming from Washington and OU, that's like, you know, four conference losses max. And that does not put you in the bottom, like, four or five of this league. So yeah, I'm with you. I think we're probably going to be in the top half of the conference looking at this now. And I feel good. Like, going into this season, I know it's preseason. I'm supposed to feel good, but I do. Like, there are past seasons preseason where I haven't felt that good. And I definitely feel good right now. Maybe not, like, going to win the league good, but, like, pretty solid. I think we're going to be a solid team that plays pretty good football. Maybe we don't have the top end talent that you need to win the whole thing, but I still think we're going to be pretty good across the board.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to not be as excited. I'm not as excited as I was in 2021, where I think I had us playing for the conference championship game. I thought Davis Brin was going to do it, and then we lost to UC Davis like three days later.
Yeah, that was rough.
It was like that night, Houston, Cincinnati, UCF announced they were leaving. Then we lost to UC Davis. It was just like getting stabbed.
That was the same day. Wow, I don't remember that. That is crazy.
So, man, trying to, you know, tamp, like, keep my expectations in check a little bit. So 8-4, not 10-2.
There we go. I like it. All right, let's keep rolling. We've got preseason award predictions to cover here. We do this every year. This season, we are doing offensive players of the year, if you want to add in multiple, defensive players of the year, breakout players of the year, who we think they're going to be. And then if you've got another award you want to throw in there, Matt, happy to do it. So let's start with offense. Do you want to start?
No, because I want to start on defense, so I'll let you take this one.
All right, sounds good. Offensive player of the year. Pretty obvious, I think. We already pretty much mentioned them. There are two top end guys on this offense, at least preseason, that look like the guys who are going to be the dudes, the kind of carry. If anyone's going to carry this team, it's these two people. We already mentioned them a few times. That is quarterback Braylon Braxton and, quote, athlete, wide receiver / running back, Braylon Presley.
Depth chart listed as wide receiver.
I'm sure it did, but, like, who knows? You know, that's what I'm saying. So those are the guys, Braxton and Presley, Braylon and Braylon at law. Last season, Braylon Braxton started four games, completed 56% of his passes, 10 touchdowns to just two interceptions, and he really came on at the end of the year. Final two games of the year were absolutely his best two games, although Ole Miss, he also played pretty well in that game, but not up to, I think the last two games were unequivocally his best two games. Those were South Florida and Houston to end the year. South Florida, 20 for 27 for 302 yards and a touchdown, no picks. That's nice. Final game of the year, Houston, 25 for 43, not quite as high of a completion percentage, 58% on that. Three touchdowns, though, no picks. And that guy was killing the Houston Cougars, who were a pretty solid team last year. And that was really nice. And that was to cap off the year. And that was Phillip Montgomery's also final game. So Braylon Braxton, really good. A lot of hype around him. I think justifiably, he's looking rock solid. He is clearly the guy this year for Tulsa. Everyone is behind him. We talked about it a bit with Caden last week. He's got the locker room. He's got the coaching staff. He's got the fans, right? That's everything you need. He's right there. The job is ready for him. I think he's ready for the job, and I'm really excited to see him out there this year. So he's definitely one. Braylon Presley being the other one. True sophomore from Oklahoma State, as probably most of you know. Caught 5 passes for 26 yards at OSU. Caden mentioned last week he did struggle to catch the ball a bit when he was early in his Oklahoma State career, although he did note that he has seen him get much, much better at that over time. So big improvements in catching, really hopeful for that. If you look at his numbers from Bixby, they are insane in this high school game. He was the 2021 Gatorade Oklahoma Player of the Year, 4-star recruit, was killing dudes in the high school scene. So really excited to see him in a Tulsa jersey on Thursday. That'll be awesome. Matt and I will both be there. We'll see that for the first time. That'll be super cool. So I think those two guys, especially with the lack of star power elsewhere in the offensive ranks, as of right now, who knows who will break out. But I think as of now, he's got a huge window to really shine in a big way. And maybe somebody else steps in there. But I think those are the two obvious guys.
Yeah, I think that note, and this just made me think of the press conference from earlier today, when Joe Bolden, who is the special teams coordinator and defensive assistant, kind of came in and, you know, was asked about the kick return teams and the punt return. And Braylon Presley is listed at, you know, second in the depth chart for both of those positions. And he said the most important attribute for those positions is that you can catch the ball. And so I think him being like listed there means that the coaching staff has got confidence that he's, you know, going to be able to get the ball. He's going to be able to secure it. And, you know, they kind of talked about, and, you know, looking at this in the lens of special teams, but, you know, how it can kind of translate to offense. You know, the comment was, you want a guy who is not afraid to be running 20 miles an hour, aiming for a gap that is about, you know, like 8 inches across. And Braylon Presley is that guy. And once he hits that gap, well, he might be gone. And I think he's kind of, and so I'm just going to, well, no, and maybe that's kind of a later award where I'll kind of give it to him specifically. But like, he's the kind of guy who is going to hit the 80-yard runs into the end zone. So, I hope so.
Why do you think that that he is listed second? Who were actually, so let me give some context here. Matt went to the press conference earlier today for Tulsa, and I've been kind of out of commission doing vacation stuff all day, so I don't even know the latest on this, on the two deep. So they released the two deep, and who are the listed starting kick return and punt return guys? You said Braylon Presley is number two on both of those. So yeah. who are the number ones?
Kick return, Jordan Ford. Punt return, Camden Benjamin. And I think those guys, so Ford got that experience, you know, been on the team for a couple of years. And Camden, I think he's listed as number two behind Braylon in the two deep for a wide receiver. I don't know. They didn't really say why it is, but the fact that, you know, Braylon's on both, I think,
yeah, totally,
is confident. So yeah, but I think you're right. I think the offensive player, and this is kind of, you know, it's the boring answer, cause it's always kind of been the case, I think, at least for me, is it comes down to the quarterback position for Tulsa, especially this year. I mean, it's got to, Braylon Braxton does not play like he did in those last two games last year, or, you know, like the flashes that we saw. Tulsa, the offense doesn't work. I have confidence that he will play like he did. I'm very excited to see how he's used differently compared to Montgomery. I feel like Montgomery had a very specific style of like what he expected his quarterbacks to do. Wilson has just had a very different type of athlete at the quarterback position in his history, like specifically thinking Ohio State, you know, the last couple of years, where he had CJ Stroud, he had Justin Fields. Like, that's what I'm kind of expecting, like that sort of template for what Tulsa is going to do. And I think that's just going to mean that Braylon Braxton is just going to have that much more of an impact. I think the quarterback is going to be more, there's going to be more expected out of him than just being a passer. Like, he's going to be a runner. He's going to be moving around a lot.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, that's just saying, I feel like the quarterback position, you know, Davis Brin, Zach Smith, those guys were not, were pocket. And like, we've got a solid offensive line. So I think we've got like he's got the chance to just knock it out of the park this year. And so, I mean, it's got to be Braxton for offensive player of the year for me.
Yeah, I think so. Right. And you made the comment of like Montgomery has a specific style and how does Braxton fit into that? And traditionally it's been, you know, it was Dane Evans, Zach Smith, all the Davis Brand, those kind of guys. Now we've got a real runner, like a real guy who can tear it up on the ground. Like, how is that going to work? And I was thinking like, well, Montgomery had that at Baylor. You know, he had RG3. He was RG3's offensive coordinator. How did he do it there? I have no idea. I didn't really look at that. I just thought of it right now. But the fact that it existed, you know, and we never really took advantage because we tried some running quarterbacks under Phillip Montgomery with like Chad President, Luke Skipper, those kind of guys, and didn't work. So I don't know what the deal was. I remember when we talked to Dane Evans way back in season one of this show, Dane made the comment of like, it's a pretty simple offense. Like there, it's not a complicated thing. There's like a couple reads and you hit those. And if they're not there, then you got to figure it out. Right. And I wonder if the offense is going to be more complicated under Kevin Wilson coming from Ohio State in a system that is definitely complicated of like, how do we pull that off at Tulsa? And do we have the guys that can do that at Tulsa? I think we do. I think especially at quarterback, I think we do. But how does that work with the rest of the offense? So I'm very intrigued by what the system is going to look like. I know he's not totally running the show. We got Spurrier Jr. doing that thing, but I know he's going to have a hand in that, obviously. So we'll see what it looks like on the field. But I think that was an interesting thing with like, yeah, now we have we've got a proven quarterback who can both run and throw. He's proved both of those things over time. And we haven't had that in quite a while. Like the other guys could run, like they were physically capable of running the ball down the field a few yards, but they weren't, you know, like true runners. Braylon Braxton can absolutely kill you on the ground. So that's, you know, it's a dimension we haven't had. I know it's a kind of a cliche thing to say, but like Tulsa has not had that in a while. So I'm excited to see it. And I think he's going to pull it off well.
Yeah. One prediction that I'll make is that Braxton will be the first Tulsa quarterback to rush for 100 yards in a single game since, can you guess which one?
First Tulsa quarterback to run for 100 yards in a single game? No. I have no idea.
Chad President in 2017 against Navy. So.
Yeah, I would have said probably President or Skipper maybe got one of those games. But all right, there we go. I like it. Write it down. I'm sure it'll happen. Yeah, that's got to happen. That's got to happen. I'm behind it.
So, okay. So switching to defense then. Let me just flip back to this. Yeah, I think we got a lot of big potential playmakers on this defensive squad. We got a lot of transfers. One thing that Wilson said, though, is that all the transfers that we got, they're good. And a lot of them are starting or going to see pretty significant time, especially on defense. Like you've got like the linebacker position specifically. You've got two impact transfers that we talked about last week and that Ryan kind of alluded to earlier and that I'm calling the law firm. And that's Simon and Smith, just because those names are just, I talked about it. Yeah. Last week.
Yep.
Forgot that was on the podcast. I thought that was just a conversation that we had. But it's like guys like that are coming in transfer, going to hit the ground running. You've got Zaid Hamden. You've got Ben Kapinski. Like you've got a bunch of guys coming in that I think, you know, maybe aren't, no single one of them is maybe quite as good as the best guys, you know, that we lost, all those guys to OSU, rip. But I think as a whole, I think a lot of them, like they, I don't know, can't really assign value, but it's like they make up for those losses that we had. That being said, I think there's kind of like two guys that come to mind, and I'm going to pick one for one award and one for the other probably. Cause there's a competition this year in camp to see who would get to wear or who would have the honor of wearing number zero. And so guy who won didn't take number zero. He decided to keep the number that he's been wearing for 5 years at Tulsa. So you can probably guess who that was.
Yeah.
That's
let me make sure I get it right. Actually, okay. I don't know. I assume it's Kendaren Ray. Is it somebody else? It is
Kay Ray. And so the whole point of the, you know, the guy who got the zero is, who had the best camp? Who was demonstrating day in and day out that they were just the most talented guy, or maybe not the most talented, but the hardest worker, putting in the effort and just was like playing phenomenally? That was Kendaren Ray. And like we've seen that in all of his years at TU. Like, I'll go back to one of the first like exciting little insights I think I had on this podcast was when I found the quote that Montgomery said, Kendarryn Ray may be the best safety to ever come through TU. And so, you know, I think like with that, he came back. That's karma. Karma plus just his natural talent and athleticism. And he's going to be the defensive player of the year for me, which is interesting because I feel like in years past, I've almost always gone with a lineman, a guy on the line, or maybe a linebacker. I don't know if I've ever picked other than, because Kendarryn Ray was definitely my breakout defensive player of the year back when he was a freshman. I remember that. But I don't know if I've actually picked one. I'd have to go back and look through the notes, and I don't want to because they might prove me wrong. The other guy that I'm just going to talk about, but you know, sneak peek, he may be my breakout defensive player of the year, is the guy who's actually wearing zero because when K-Ray passed, they moved on to the next guy, and that's Ben Kapinski.
When K-Ray passed, he's still alive, sorry, everybody. He's still with us here today.
Yeah. When he passed on the opportunity to wear zero, he still won. And that's Ben Kapinski. Ben came from OSU. He's one of the guys we got in the return deal, along with Braylon Presley, for the OSU to TU Transfer Portal Express. And a lot of the same reasons. I mean, everybody's talking about how he's just come in and he's just had a huge impact on that defensive line. And I think he kind of just bolsters it. And like, you look at that line of Kapinski, Anderson, Jaden Simon, Owen Ostrowski, like that line is going to be solid. Yeah, and I feel like you have to include Owen Ostrowski and Joseph Anderson as two more guys who I think have been here and that are going to have a huge impact. I mean, Owen, last year, Houston, best game of his career. So he's coming off of like two sacks. Joseph Anderson, not as much of a sack guy, but a tackle for loss, which, you know, is the more important statistic, you know, when talking about them, I guess, like that. So I feel like the entire line is good, and it's has the potential to be just as good as it's been in the last couple of years. But I'll save them for breakout, and I'm going to stick with Kendarryn Ray for defensive player of the year.
Yep, I've got the same guy. He feels like the obvious one again. Like, it feels like there's two obvious people for offensive and defensive, and it's Braylon Braxton and Kendarryn Ray. Conveniently, they were also the two people that Kevin Wilson took with him to AAC Media Days a couple months back, or just last month. And they're the guys. They are clearly the two big names on both sides of the ball that can get it done for us. Even Braylon Presley, who we mentioned on offense, he's a bit of an unknown. He's a younger guy. We haven't seen him in a Tulsa uniform. Like, he's got all the hype around him, so I'm sure he's going to deliver. But like, until then, you don't know. So like, those are the obvious ones. So yeah, with you on Ray, been a leader since he's been here. Like you mentioned, had 40 tackles his true freshman season. 40 tackles ever since then, just gotten better and better. He dealt with an injury two seasons ago, jumped back in a big way last year, and I think he's going to pick it back up again. The thing I want to see more, if possible, from Kendarryn Ray, he only has one interception in all four seasons that he's played so far, and be real nice if that picks up a little bit. I know we got a bunch of DBs back there. You know, we play a five-man back, and who knows? Like, there's a lot of guys vying to get picks, but we haven't been a very interception-heavy defense in general. We have a lot of pass breakups over the years, but have not been a big turnover defense. So generally, I just hope we see more turnovers on the defensive side of the ball this year. Of course, that would be nice, but he's a guy that can deliver that. Big physical dude, 6'4", 200 pounds. Certainly could make it to the NFL next year with a big year this season. So I'm hoping for it as well. The other guy I'll throw out there that I have for defensive player of the year is Owen Ostrowski. I really think he has a chance to be the best player on the defense. I think most likely it's going to be Kendarryn Ray. I think Ostrowski has a real shot. He was second on the team last year in sacks. I know you talk about TFLs are the more important thing, but sacks, he was up there in those too. Three-man front, switching to a four-man front, talked about a little bit last week. We're going to be playing more, it seems like, more of a four-man front than three-man, although it sounds like we're going to do both here and there. I think he is positioned well to really get an upgrade statistically from that move. So I'm really hoping he delivers. Like, just last year, 23 tackles, 2.5 sacks, a couple more TFLs, forced fumble. I think he's got, like you mentioned, Kapinski. He's kind of a name that's been gaining some serious momentum here recently. Joe Anderson is awesome. Jaden Simon is awesome. Like, that line is great. for Ostrowski, if Ostrowski ends up being the best of that group, there's a good chance he's the best guy on the team because that line is looking really good. If Kendaren Ray isn't already that guy, so he's another one to throw out there. But yeah, that's how I'm feeling. Let's keep rolling. Breakout players of the year. I'm going to repeat a name I just said, Owen. He's a redshirt sophomore. He's a young dude. He has not yet broken out, I would argue. So I think he's a prime candidate for this. I just gave all the reasons why. He's really primed, I think, to win this thing and to be maybe the best guy on that line. Since I already said his name, I'll throw out one more. And this is interesting. The depth chart just came out today, as we talked about before. And he's not even listed as a starter, but a guy I had listed in my notes as another one is Kaywon Parker, the Arkansas transfer at corner. And he is listed as the number two guy at the corner spot after Tyree Carlisle. So we'll see. Maybe that becomes a competition. Maybe Tyree is awesome and wins that job and sticks with it. That'd be great. As long as we got somebody who's really solid there, I'm happy. But it sounded like from all the offseason stuff, they couldn't stop talking about Kaywon Parker. So I thought it was going to be him. So we'll see. We'll see on that one. But I think he can step in there and be really effective. I have a third guy, but before I say all the names on the roster, Matt, I will let you go first and list a couple of your breakout players.
Yeah. So I kind of already alluded to it. I talked about Ben Kapinski. I'm just going to say his name again. I think on the other side of the line, same position as Owen, though, he's got a chance to break out too. I mean, he played for OSU. OSU, you know, has, especially in the last couple of years, just had an amazing defense. And so, you know, he wasn't a starter over there, came over specifically to, you know, get more playing time. But I mean, he's just got so much potential that I could definitely see, you know, and I, like you were saying, I could see it being Owen. I'm going to go and just go with the guy who's wearing zero because I don't know. Wilson, the coaching staff saw something in him and I'm going to go with them and I'm going to ride their coattails.
Nice. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, and I would be remiss not to talk about Simon and Smith. I think those guys, you know, two transfers, they're, you know, call one starter, 1A, 1B. I mean, they're the type of position where they are going to be coming in and out. And I think that's kind of a huge, like the linebacker is the crux to whether or not you can make, you know, four or three up front kind of position. And so if we've got the confidence that we're going to be running with both, I've got the confidence that the linebacker is going to be up to the task, whatever they're asked, whether they're asked to, you know, drop back or if they're going to be rushing. So I think one of those two, maybe their joint position, could also be that breakout defensive player.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was going to call out Colton Smith too, and same reasons you did. It's interesting because on this initial depth chart, it's a 4-2-5, right? So I wonder how much it's going to be split between that and then a 3-3-5. Part of me is wondering if they are pretty much only going to do a 4-2-5 and just like wanted to say we're going to do some 3-3-5 in there because Tulsa fans are so used to it. I don't actually think that's the reason why, but part of my brain is somewhat thinking that. So we'll see. But yeah, like if it ends up being a 3-3-5, I think we'll see both of those guys at the same time, Julian Simon, Colton Smith at linebacker simultaneously. But it's 4-2-5, limited role, obviously. And it sounds like Mitch Culkin, the walk-on, is going to get the starting role there, which would also be awesome, especially if he can deliver. So yeah, good stuff. I think those names all make sense to me. I don't have anybody else really that's knocking on the door that I need to throw in here at the last second. So I'm feeling good about those guys. You, anything to add or you want to move on to, Arkansas Pine Bluff?
Did you give an offensive breakout player of the year? And did I miss that? Was I supposed to do that at the same time?
I didn't separate them into offense and defense. I just gave who I thought was going to break out.
Okay.
Maybe I should have, but now all my breakout players of the year are on defense, which is maybe reflective of how I think of the offense right now of those guys. Like, I just don't see anybody like, let me look at the depth chart. This is the latest news here. Let me just read the names. If people haven't seen it yet on Twitter or anything, on the offensive line, Kyleon Herbert, Chester Baugh, Will Farniak at center, Bryce Bray, and Daryl Simpson. That's the offensive line starting. Then you got tight end Ethan Hall or Luke McGarry. So we'll see what happens on game day there. Luke McGarry, he's a freshman. So if he ends up being the starter, that's big stuff. Then at quarterback, Braylon Braxton, Cardo Williams listed as the backup. That dude lit it up at the spring game, so I'm not surprised he is the backup quarterback. Running back, This is what we talked about with Caden last week. It's Jordan Ford and Bill Jackson as the two deep at running back. And then third string is Taj Gary or Anthony Watkins. And seeing Anthony Watkins as the fourth name, even though it's an or there, the fourth name on the running back chart is so weird, so bizarre to me. He seemed like just gonna be the guy that was gonna run away with it this year with Denarius Prince heading off to the NFL. So that is bizarre. I don't know what the deal is there. But Jordan Ford and Bill Jackson are running back. And then at wide receiver, the three deep there are Marquise Shoulders, Braylon Presley, and Devin Williams, who's also a redshirt freshman. So a young squad. Malachi Jones is listed as a backup receiver. And I know he's been dealing with injuries, so maybe that's the reason. Like they called it out. He had an ankle thing going on. Maybe that's why. But yeah, it is bizarre, man, that to see that like of that group, who's going to break out? I would say maybe Bill Jackson. Like if I were to put an offensive guy, that's who I would say. If I'm not going to count Braylon Presley because everybody's expecting him to be the big name guy, I guess I would say Bill Jackson. I hope it's Bill Jackson because he's from St. Louis and like I want that dude to do well. So I'll say Bill Jackson if I was forced to pick an offensive breakout player of the year.
Yeah, mine was going to be Luke McGarry just because I think I fully expected Ethan Hall to have tight end locked up. Yeah. And the fact that it's an or there kind of is like, whoa, okay. That's kind of, I feel like he's got to have made an impact and had like a very strong camp. And I don't know. He just kind of strikes me as the guy that could have a really good year. And he's got, you know, an 87, you know, a nice tight end number. so I'm trying to think, is he a local guy? Let me look at this by jersey number. No, he's from Plano. Never mind. Yeah, so it's going to be that. The one wide receiver set, whatever you want to call it, that interests me is kind of that last wide receiver where you've got Devin Williams and Carl Chester. Like, there is a difference between every other wide receiver and those two, and that they're both over 6 foot and over 190 pounds.
Yeah.
I think just years past, I've kind of been like, I like those big, tall wide receivers that can kind of like throw their weight around. And so I'm like, I don't know. You've got a redshirt freshman listed number one there. So I'd love to see what Devin Williams can do. Not going to list him as a breakout player though. So
yeah, I agree. That's a good call out. I like it.
Yeah. And I don't know if we really need to, I don't know if we can do a special teams player of the year or anything like that. I just want to go quickly kind of over the news that kind of, I don't know if it came out today. It's not really like breaking news or anything like that. But yeah, Tyler Tipton, who I kind of assumed to be the heir apparent to Zach Long in terms of, because he was our like kickoff specialist last year. Yeah. Not in the two deep, not on the website, not on this roster at all. He was on the website. Not on the website
is so bizarre because you mentioned he was on there last week, right?
He was on there last week because I had, you know, like we ran out of time with Caden, but I was going to ask a question kind of about how he looked and how special teams looked. And, you know, he was on the website. He was not on there today. So our place kicker, one is Chase Meyer, two is Michael Slaba. And our punter is Angus Davies and Scott Stanford. Looking at the two deep, you might think that's a very young room. Chase Meyer is a sophomore transfer. I believe he redshirted for a year. He was at Penn previously, and he kicked. He was their kickoff guy last year, so he's got some experience. Kevin Wilson was saying he's not the guy who's going to drill it like 55, 60 yards a game. So, you know, he kind of made a point to emphasize that special teams is really going to be a like extension of the defense this year. And so that's why Bolden, who is the, we already kind of talked about special teams coordinator, comes from the defensive side because, you know, he's made a point to say, you know, the most important part of our defense is going to be how are we covering downfield. And so, you know, just nice to hear that because it didn't really seem like that was a thought of, or like a, not a thought, that wasn't like high in the list of priorities for special teams in the past. It was just kind of like, we'll see what happens. That's what it felt like. Obviously, I don't know anything about that. Yeah. But he was also kind of coy and being like, who are we going to be expect to be kicking field goals? And he was like, you know, there's the upright. You know, it's not super easy to get it in, but it's not, you know, super difficult, I guess. So we'll just see, you know, whoever's doing a better job of getting it in between, you can expect to see them kicking. So I feel like they just don't like it's kind of up in the air on who's going to do it, but I'm pretty sure Chase Meyer is going to be our kickoff guy. And then the punter. So they're both listed as freshmen. One, Angus Davies, freshman, quote, high school. The other one, freshman, is a redshirt freshman. But Angus Davies, I believe, is 23. And he went to that Australian punting like academy.
Nice.
And so the story.
23 and a high school, like first year guy.
Nice. Yeah. And so I think he's from the same system or like whatever, like Lachlan was at. And so Kevin Wilson was kind of, you know, this just funny story. He's like, yeah. So I was kind of on the recruiting trail, also doing stuff with Ohio State still with December. You know, we had the playoffs. And I just got a phone call. And they're like, hey, we got your punter. And he was like, okay, like, do I need to? And they're like, nope, we got you a guy. Don't worry about it. So that is our punter, is just fresh out of the Australian. He played Australian football for like 14 years. That's freshman, but probably has, you know, some actual experience kicking the ball. So,
yeah. Dang, man. That is wild about first. It's wild about Tyler Tipton that he is just straight up not on the team anymore. I feel for him because like he seemed like a good dude. Like he was always around. Like, he was waiting for his time under Zach Long. And I mean, he was the first like scholarship kicker that Montgomery ever signed. So there was some hype behind him, you know, like as much hype as a signed kicker can have, really, but like there was some, and now I don't know what happened. I have no clue. So yeah, just bizarre. It'll be interesting to see. I'm sure that'll come to light here in the next couple of weeks of where he's at and what he's doing. But yeah, not on the team. That's crazy. All right. Want to move to our last section of the day, which is previewing some football, which is Arkansas Pine Bluff. You got anything else? You want to move to that?
No, I'm ready to go.
Let's do it. I'm psyched. It is in 3.5 days. It's so crazy right now. We are right there. So Arkansas Pine Bluff from the FCS, if you're not aware, D1 FCS 2022, they went 3-8, 1-7 in the SWAC, the Southwestern Athletic Conference. So not a good team last year, although as that is sometimes an indicator for FCS teams, because there's not a ton of data on the FCS teams, it is not really an indicator for this team. They have all new players. They got a new quarterback. They have a whole new coaching staff. They've got a brand new running back and a brand new starting wide receiver, like their main wide receiver. So pretty much every skill position is brand new. The coaching staff is brand new and everything's new. So lots of stuff going on here. Their head coach name is Alonzo Hampton. First head coaching job for him in any capacity in college. He's been an assistant coach at a bunch of places in some way or another, including schools like South Florida, Florida State, Arkansas, most recently Louisiana Monroe. So he's new there. Don't know much about him, to be honest, aside from a little bit of his history. Their offensive coordinator, Bobby Acosta, their defensive coordinator, David Callaway, all first year guys. So very, very new, which makes me feel pretty good about this. A lot of stuff for them to figure out before they maybe find their footing in some way. I mentioned already, they lost their quarterback last year. That dude was Skylar Perry. He is graduated and gone. So who's going to be the guy this year? I have no idea. The idea that like the potential guys, there's three, I think. Two guys got meaningful snaps last season. Those were a redshirt freshman in Jalen McCone and a sophomore in Chancellor Edwards. Those are their years now. Now a redshirt freshman, now a sophomore. The intriguing guy, who I think might be the starter this season, is a dude from St. Louis, Missouri. Name is Mekki Hagins. He came from a JUCO, Cisco College. He played at Cardinal Ritter High School in Missouri, which I know of pretty well. And that is, if you're really following Tulsa football, that is the same high school that Bill Jackson came out of. So they very well may have played together in high school. So this dude, Mekki Hagins, he actually was a kind of a big name recruit. He was a 3-star guy coming out of high school. He got an offer from Mizzou and 13 other schools. So like a pretty decent name, but ended up at a JUCO, I assume because of grades, but you never know. Would not be, and this is his first year with the program. He just transferred there. So I would not be surprised if he ends up being the starting guy, Mekki Hagins. And if that's the case, they're going to have some talent, I think, at the quarterback spot, which is a little bit scary. So we'll see what happens with him. But it's either going to be Hagins, McCone, or Edwards at quarterback. And I think Hagin's probably the most likely guy. Last season, if it's any indicator, Arkansas Pine Bluff was extremely run heavy. Their receivers, I think the starting wide receiver had 300 receiving yards. Like their best guy had 300 receiving yards last year. And he's gone. So like, there is, unless they totally shift their game plan up and they brought in a bunch of new receivers that are going to light it up, I think they're probably going to be pretty run heavy again, just based on the talent that's on the team right now. Their running back last year was an 1,000-yard guy, Kayvon Britton. He's also gone. This is the theme with this team, all new team. He had 200 carries last season, and he's gone, like I mentioned. Their main returner with the most yards from last year, is his name is Kirsten Rogers. He's a sophomore, only had 23 carries compared to 200 for Kayvon Britton. So it was the Britton show for sure. So yeah, that's the rundown on them. I don't have a ton on Pine Bluff. I think they, who knows, like all new stuff, but if it's any if last year was any indication, they're going to be running the ball a lot. They're not going to be, their receivers are not high end talent. And they didn't have a good quarterback last year, but I think they do have a good quarterback this year. And I think they did bring in some guys over the offseason that can maybe catch the ball pretty well. So maybe they totally switched it up on us, but that's how they were last year. And all in all, should be a win. Should be a game we win and get the Kevin Wilson era started on the right foot.
Yeah. It's funny. Just, well, I don't know, funny, but just similarities in like how Kevin Wilson was kind of talking about this game is, you know, the press conference didn't focus a ton on Arkansas Pine Bluff. It's more just about how TU's feeling, how, you know, certain guys are looking, stuff like that. Because as you mentioned, like everything is so new at Arkansas Pine Bluff. Their players, their coaches, like Alonzo Hampton, first year coach, he was at USF, Oregon, FSU, Arkansas, and Louisiana Monroe. The offensive coordinator is Bobby Acosta, who's been all over the place and apparently was at IMG and like won the national champ asterisk because it was 2020. no, I don't want to put any bulletin board material up. And then like, yeah, so Kevin was just talking about my good pal, Kevin, was talking about, you know, you've got to watch like 8 different teams worth of tape. Because, you know, their top players played somewhere else, coaches, other systems. So he said, you know, it's tough. And the most important thing is to kind of get Tulsa's system how they need to be, because, you know, that's what it's going to take. It's as long as we've got all, like we're running on our system as we should, he's confident that we've got what it takes to win. I am also confident that Tulsa has got what it takes to win. There's no line right now, but if you look up, like if you can find a couple previews or stuff, I mean, it's looking like a 30-point potential.
Ooh.
All right. Prediction, not line necessarily. I think the line will be a couple scores though. I think so new on offense, and their offensive line is not super great, based on what I've been able to read. So I think this will be a really good, showing on our defense, which I think is the best way, is like for our defense to kind of take control of this game, give our offense, because it's so young, like take pressure off, because you know what our defense, well, wasn't really on our defense, but you know, you go back to the UC Davis game, like, and obviously completely different team, completely different coaching staff, stuff like that. But just kind of like looking at when your offense doesn't really have it, isn't putting up a lot of points, and we were dealing with like half of our defense was suspended for that game.
And was UC Davis, was that just last season?
No, it was 21.
Okay. I was like, man, that seemed like longer ago. Okay.
There you go. No, last year the first game was the Wyoming game. So I think our defense is going to be to have like an excellent to amazing game. And then our offense, if they're not coming out right out the door, will just get it going like mid first quarter, and then just
I agree. I think if we're saying that we think it's going to be anywhere from a 7-5 to a 9-3 season, like in the good scenarios here, you got to win this game by 28 or more. Like you got to put away this team. It cannot, if it's a close game, all bets are off for any record we said today. If Thursday comes around and we win by 4 or we lose the game, then we're not going 8-4 in the American this year. I know it's a first year head coach. You can always think that like, oh, it's game one. Like even though it's a bad loss, maybe they'll get it together. You don't recover that severely. I guess you could. I don't know. I just don't think it's likely. So got to take care of business in a big way against what was a bad FCS team and probably still is a bad FCS team. Don't leave any question marks after game one. then you go into games 2 and 3 with no pressure on you. No one is expecting you to beat Washington and OU. I know we all hope that they do, but like, there's not any pressure on the Tulsa players to like, oh my God, if we lose this game, it's going to look horrible on us. Take care of business in week one, go into week 2 and 3, loose, feeling good. Maybe you pull one of those off. That would be incredible. All right. So let's do it. I'm feeling good about this game. Obviously, I'm feeling good about weeks 2 and 3. Be at both of them. Really excited. Going to be at this one too. And we'll see the new mascot and everything. I guess we can talk about that for a real quick second, Matt. What do you think I know they listed the top four names, and it was like Hurricane Hank, Herc, Gust E, and Gale, I think, were the top four. What do you think is going to be the winner for the new mascot name?
It's going to start with an H. It's got to.
Hurricane Hank or Herc?
You got to go alliteration. I hope it's Herc.
Let me ask you behind the scenes here, if you're willing to share, what did you vote for if you voted?
Oh, I voted for Herc.
Nice, me too.
Yeah. It was
two Herc stands here.
Yeah, I would be okay with Hank. I think Hurricane Hank is my only fear with a name like that is there will be a Hurricane Hank that is like devastating.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh man, that's kind of awkward.
Then we got to change it again or something.
Yeah. So I just like, you know, let's avoid the realistic names just to avoid, you know, in the next 100 years, whenever Hurricane Hank.
Yeah, Hurricane Hercules is probably pretty down the list in terms of what they're going to be picking for us. So probably safe. I also voted for Herc. Definitely hoping it's that. I like Hurricane Hank. It's a good name. I won't be sad if they pick. Honestly, I wouldn't be sad if they picked any of those four. So I'll be fine either way. But definitely pulling for Herc.
I hope it's not Gale. That one just didn't excite me.
Doesn't have the pizzazz, you know? Yeah, I'm with you. I don't really super love Gust E either. Like Gusty, if it was just Gusty, makes more sense to me. Gust E feels too hard to say and explain to people. Like, no, it's Gust space E. It's not Gusty. That's going to be a conversation all the time.
Do we know why? What's the reason for this?
Oh, wait, no, it wasn't Gust space E. It was Gus space E, not Gust space T or whatever. Yeah, it was Gus, G-U-S space E, period. Right. And I don't want to have to explain. No, it's not Gusty.
It's Gus space T. I think.
Yeah. Is that what I was saying?
You were mixed up.
That's what I was thinking.
But
no, sorry.
No matter what, this is why it doesn't make sense. Yeah, because we don't even know what it is.
It's true. That is so true. I don't want to have to explain the name. Herc is a cool name. It's like, why is it Herc? I don't know. It sounds cool. Like, just deal with it. It's fine. You don't have to explain it. Hurricane Hank makes sense. Also, it's just like, it's a hurricane. His name is Hank. Don't worry about it. Gale makes sense. Also, like, honestly, Gale, I think Gus T, while it is clever, I don't want to have to explain it to everybody every time I say, what's your mascot's name? Not that everybody every day is asking me what's the name of your mascot, but it happens. So like, I don't want to explain it.
Gus T sounds like he wears like a top hat and has a cane. He's looking like Mr. Peanut. Like,
hey, we haven't seen the whole mascot yet.
That's so, what like, I imagine.
Maybe the mascot's got a monocle on that.
If that's what he looks like, then I hope it's Gus T, because then maybe Herc doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that would make more sense. I like it. Sweet. All right. Let's call it a show. Actually, we've got I started calling this out. We've got 5-star reviews to read out live on the show. Thank you, Andy X1, for this 5-star review. If you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we will read it live on the show. Also Spotify, but I don't check Spotify and I don't use it. So much less likely if you leave it over there. I think Matt uses Spotify though, so he might be checking over there. So yeah, he does. So we're good. If you leave it on Spotify, we'll find it. But Andy X1 left a 5-star written review for us and said, Ryan and Matt are doing the Lord's work. Love everything they do for TU Athletics. Rain Kane. Thank you, Andy. Really appreciate that. That is super nice. Love seeing those. If you want to do the same, we would really appreciate it. We will read it live on the show, just like we did right here. So appreciate you, Andy X1, and hit us up if you want to get in touch. All right, Matt, anything else? You ready to call this thing a show?
I think I'm ready to call this and just... go to sleep until Thursday.
Go to sleep till Thursday. Me too, man. I'm so ready for it. And we will both be there. So if you're in town, hit us up. Say hey. It'll be awesome. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the show. If you're not already, make sure you are following us at the follow button in Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to the show. That will send you updates every time we release a new episode, which is every week, usually on Mondays or Tuesdays. Actually, probably more like Tuesdays or Wednesdays. While you're there following the show, drop a rating, drop a review. Like I mentioned, we will read 5-star reviews, written reviews out on the show. And we really do appreciate them. They mean a lot. We do all this totally for free. No ads in the show. no paid content of any kind. The website is free, all that stuff. So if you want to help us out, keep us going, you can support us financially in a few ways. Go to our website, thegoldenhurricanes.com/support. We've got several ways on there. You can check them out. One of them is merch. I mentioned this the past two episodes. Now is the time. We've got a game in 3 days. If you want to rock a brand new Hurricane shirt, Matt's pointing to him right now on the show. I know you can't see it, but he's got a big bin of shirts and hoodies back there. We've got a lot of them. And we also have mugs and stickers. So if you want to get your Hurricane game on, we've got plenty. And for game one of the season is here in 3 days, probably 2 days by the time you're listening to this. So check it out, goldenhurricanes.com/merch. You'll see all our stuff. And if you buy some, we'll send it to you. And finally, you can find us on Twitter/X at Golden Hurricast, or you can send us an email. And our email address is thegoldenhurricast@gmail.com. Thanks again, everybody, for listening to the podcast. And we will talk to you next week.
Stay golden.